North Coast Church in Vista, California. Group Life is the second of three mini-series presented under the title, Building Better Relationships. In this series, we explore the biblical principles for relating in group environments, our world, our workplace, and even the church. So let's join Pastor Steve Redden as he begins today's message.
Responding appropriately to frustrating or difficult people is tricky, is difficult. But it's critical, it's crucial if we're going to experience the kind of quality relationships that we all want to have, especially when it comes to the groups that we find ourselves in the world, the workplace, the church, and community groups, teams, politics, all those kind of things that involve us in groups. Sometimes difficult people, we've given them a title tonight, cracked pots or crackpots, depending on what your label would be for them. Sometimes in literature, both in secular and in Christian literature, they have a title called EGRs, Extra Grace Required. Yeah, we all know some, don't we, here and there. The fact is, if you want to find an extra grace required person, though, just go look in the mirror tonight when you get home, today when you get home, whenever. Because the fact is, all of us, at one point or another, are going to need some extra grace from God and from the people around us. But what we're talking about here today is not just times where there's these moments in our life or episodes in our life where we require extra grace. What we're talking about is the kind of people that, kind of in all situations, in all kinds of relationships, just annoying people, frustrating to deal with. And oftentimes, they exhibit personality characteristics and traits, or they make decisions that are poor. They drive a wedge in, they poison, they disrupt all kinds of relationships. And oftentimes people that are like this don't even know that they're doing it. But the damage they can do to groups, to circles of people, whether it's a growth group, a family, all kinds of different groups you can imagine, the damage they can do oftentimes, they're not even aware of that either. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 1, it's a great little cynical little proverb that Solomon writes there. He says, hey, even expensive perfume starts to stink if a dead fly gets in it. The whole point that all it takes is just a little bit of just something that can really mess up some really quality stuff. And there's all kinds of application to that. And when it comes to dealing with frustrating people, that's the same kind of thing. We got to find a way to respond appropriately. Today, we're not going to talk about how not to be a difficult person, how not to be an EGR, how to work on those issues in our life. What we're going to really talk about is how to respond appropriately when we encounter people that are difficult and frustrating for us, especially in group life. Now, as we do this, my guess is for those of us out there that have, this may surface some issues for us, there may be a pointer here there that you'll pick up and go, you know what, that's a good one. I should remember that one for me in terms of some issues maybe I have in my life. We're going to look at five different kinds of annoying, frustrating, irritating, crackpots kind of people. Now, the reason we're looking at five is because there's about 55, and there was no way to go through 55 of them and do it that way. So I tried to group some things together, and we're not going to cover all the kinds of frustrating people, but I thought it might be more helpful for us today that rather than try to, broad brush principles over all kinds of frustrating people, to look at five particular kinds of people and see if we could find some help in dealing with them. And my guess is as we do this, you're going to find some crossover into some other situations, other people in your life as well. So let's get going with the first kind of frustrating kind of people we're going to meet. The first kind of frustrating people are just annoying. Annoying people. Their personality, their habits, their quirks that they have, sometimes their social skills, they just bother. And we all know people like that. I'll probably look around this room. If we all got locked in here for about 10 minutes, you probably have a few of those. It would start making us all a little crazy. Here's how to respond. Kind of just getting after some of that real quick. How to respond? First of all, it's kind of a disclaimer. Absolute honesty is absolute nonsense. Those of you that are married will Well, get a hearty amen on that one. Yeah, absolute honesty is absolute nonsense. Some things are better left unsaid. In Proverbs, find Proverbs chapter 19, verse 11. Proverbs 19, verse 11 says that a man's wisdom gives him patience. It is to his glory to overlook an offense. That's a difficult one for some of us, because for some of us, boy, everything that bothers us, we feel like we have to get after. We have to confront. We have to deal with and settle and resolve. And sometimes we just need to get over ourselves. We just need to recognize I need to develop some thick skin here. This person's just going to bother me. They're just going to annoy me. And sometimes we have sometimes even spiritualized this. And I've seen people try to spiritualize confronting people and being a jerk to people that annoy them by, you know, and telling them every annoying thing about them in a very cruel way, and then excuse it by saying, I'm just being honest. I'm just trying to show him his faults or show her faults. There's certainly a place for that. We're going to look at that in a second. But the idea that everywhere, all the time, we're doing that is just nonsense. Proverbs 17:9 says, he who covers over an offense promotes love. Whoever repeats the matter separates close friends. Ephesians chapter 4 and Colossians chapter 3. Paul there, writing this letter to these Christians, says, be humble and be gentle. In both places he says, put up with each other. Bear with each other. You know why he had to say that? Because there are people like you in his church. Well, maybe not like you. Maybe like me. And they just knew there were going to be things that we just get on each other's nerves and annoy each other. It doesn't mean with annoying people that you have to be their best friend. It doesn't mean you have to like them. It doesn't mean you have to kind of choose to put yourself around there. And it's kind of like annoying people are kind of like scratching a chalkboard. Do they do that to you? Ah. It doesn't mean you have to walk in the room and say, do it to me again. You might have some boundaries and some clarifying conversations there. But so you have to be absolutely honest about it all the time is absolute nonsense. Here's where you kind of need to step in, though, with annoying people, I think. When it starts to annoy everybody, in the groups that we're in, whether it's a growth group, in our family, on a team, in a work situation, a work group, when it starts to annoy everybody, what needs to happen here is straight talk. When it starts annoying everyone, straight talk is what needs to happen. Flip over to Proverbs 28:23. Proverbs 28:23. It says there that he who rebukes a man will in the end gain more favor than he who has a flattering tongue. There is a time and a place to step in and confront some things. And then just probably right across the page, or maybe flip back one page in your Bible, Proverbs chapter 27, verse 5. See, we all have blind spots. Sometimes people that are annoying don't even recognize yet how disruptive their annoying thing that they do, how badly that's disrupting the group. That it's really, putting the group is running with the brakes on, because everybody's walking around either in fear of this person or just frustrated with the person. There's no teamwork that's developing. Proverbs 27 verse 5 says, better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses. And then look down at verse 9. This is a great one. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart. Just that, oh, that just smells good. And the pleasantness, he compares it now, and the pleasantness of one's friend springs from his earnest counsel. So in dealing with annoying people, absolute honesty is absolute nonsense. But when they start to annoy everybody, especially in group life, the best thing to do is just have some straight talk. Because you'll find that with most people kind of want to hear that if they're really doing things that are that bad. It might be a little shaky and a little, you might be a little insecure going into it, but most people want to know that kind of stuff. I mean, if I walked in here today and before I walked up on stage, my zipper's down, I would want somebody to tell me that so I didn't annoy all of you during the service today. So, same kind of thing. When we see things and it's starting to affect, it's going to affect a lot of people, step in and say something. That's the first kind of person. The second kind of person we're going to look at is a lazy person. People that are lazy. And I want to take some time and kind of look at some character qualities. I'm going to list out some things. You can fill in the blanks there. Lazy people, Proverbs calls them, I love the words that that Proverbs uses for them. Proverbs 26, verse 16. The sluggard. That's like just a big snail slug just sits there. Bleh. The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly. Big dreams and ideas with no follow through. Lots of ideas, and especially ideas on how you should spend your time and how you should spend your money on the latest thing that's going on. When it comes to them working hard and them stepping up, nah. And they have the big dreams and ideas, and they think they have the best ones, and they don't ever execute. Some of you that have people you work with see this all the time. People that all the time come up with ideas for every department, all these great things, and they don't ever pull it off and ever follow through on it. Secondly, Proverbs 26:13 says the sluggard says there's a lion in the road, a fierce lion roaming the streets. There's not really a lion out there, and there's not going to be a chance there's a lion out there, but it's just possible that day the zoo had a power failure and all the cages open and a lion is walking around in the streets. So I can't go out and work today because a lion might get me. They're always full of excuses. Always have an excuse for not working. Always have an excuse for not working. Proverbs 20, verse 4. There it is again. A sluggard. A sluggard does not plow in season. And the key word there is in season. A sluggard does not plow in season. So at harvest time he looks, but finds nothing. Lazy people have big dreams and ideas with no follow through, always have excuses for not working, and then they also miss opportunities. They miss opportunities, and usually because they're short-sighted. It's just easier to stay in bed and sleep today. It's easier. We work with college students here. We talk about this, that those of you that are in college right now, this is your time to plow in season. With education, and some of college students, people don't go to college, but to begin to develop the discipline of learning some things and acquiring the skills and the discipline. Andy Nah, who led worship for us here in the main auditorium here today, used to be our junior high pastor, and he's worked with college students for a lot of years, and he always tells them, hey, the reason you go to college is not for what you're going to learn there education-wise, because probably you're not going to work in a field where you're ever going to apply any of that. The reason you go to college is to learn how to do stuff that you don't like doing. Going to boring classes that you see no relevance for it, because guess what? You're going to have a job someday that's going to be like that, where there's going to be parts of it. Even the best job in the world has parts of it. You just go, oh, I don't feel like doing that today. It's just stupid. I hate it. And the problem is that the people that are lazy will get bogged down in missed opportunities. It talks about that the way of the sluggard is blocked with thorns, and that in Proverbs chapter 24, 30 to 34, They never get ahead. It says he walked past the field of the sluggard and he looked there and he saw just everything overgrown and it's all a mess there. Because you know what will happen with the lazy person? All of a sudden they'll wake up and go, you know what? I should probably get to work on some of this. What they have to do is work so hard just to clear off the mess and the consequences of not plowing in season. Then when it comes to really being productive, I'm just too tired now. So they don't plow in season, don't take care of things in season. So then when harvest time comes, when they want the great job and the good opportunities and all those kind of things, haven't done the work back here. That's lazy people. Here's how we respond to lazy people. Real simple, one line. Help those who can't help themselves, not those who won't. Help those who can't help themselves, not those who won't. We're going to look at the first part of that over in Proverbs chapter 28. I know it's going to take you a second to write that down. Proverbs 28, verse 27. Proverbs 28, 27 says, he who gives to the poor will lack nothing, but he who closes his eyes to them receives many curses. Flip over just a couple pages to the right in your Bible. Proverbs chapter 31. Look at verse 8 and 9. Proverbs 31, 8 and 9 says, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. It's real easy sometimes in a society like ours to just kind of look at poor and needy and just kind of go, oh, you know what, forget them all. They're all just lazy slobs, and make our list about things. And there probably is some truth to that in our culture and our world today, that people are abusing systems that are there to take care of genuinely poor people. But the fact is, we can't miss that, especially as followers of Jesus Christ. Over and over again in Proverbs and in the New Testament, talks over and over again about how we are going to be judged as people for how we respond to and treat people that cannot help themselves, for genuinely poor people. We're supposed to step in there and do whatever we can to help meet those needs for people who can't help themselves, but not for those who won't help themselves. Proverbs chapter 19, flip back a little bit. Proverbs 19, verse 15, it's a key verse here on this. It says, laziness brings on deep sleep, and the shiftless man goes hungry. The idea there is let him. Let him go hungry. You don't have to turn there. You can if you want. Just a few pages left. Proverbs 16:26 says, the laborer's appetite works for him. His hunger drives him on. There's something motivating about having to take care of your basic needs. And when we step in and just meet people's needs who won't meet them for themselves, especially when it's a over and over and over again kind of situation, we're just enabling them to stay stuck out there and stay stuck in that lazy condition. And then keep a note sheet here in Proverbs and go back to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians 3, if it's kind of a little book there right after 1 Thessalonians. But I know, that's sometimes I wonder, okay, 1st, 2nd, where is that thing in there? You've got to look all over the place. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verse 6 says, in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers, to keep away from every brother who is idle and does not live according to the teaching you receive from us. And then down at verse 10, here's the teaching. For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not work, he shall not eat. Pretty clear. If people will not step up and do what they're supposed to do, do not step in and help them. It's funny, there's times when people, especially people that seem to just never be able to hold down a job, are all, and this is not like a crisis where somebody gets laid off work, because I know there's some of us that are here today, and wherever we're watching this, that you've hit a crisis, you got laid off work and things are tough, and this is not about that. This is about people that seemed on an over and over and over again kind of thing, just can't seem to keep that job and keep getting let go, and then they just are waiting around for the ideal job to come. Sometimes that'll happen where, oh, I can't go and do that because I have a master's in biochemical engineering from Stanford. I can't go out and just be a laborer somewhere. No. And they won't do it over and over again. And sometimes people get in situations where they start talking, they start feeling like Job. And you'll hear them in groups talk about just like Job. I got the Job syndrome going, man. It's just a Job thing. And a guy this week was talking about that, some people he knows, and he said, yeah, my response to people like that, that are over and over again, keep talking about it over and over again, I got the Job syndrome and won't go out and take advantage of opportunities. You know how you get rid of the Job syndrome? Go get a job. And even if it means doing stuff that you just, well, that's not really what I want to do. I have talked to people over the years, and one of the things, the best pieces of advice I remember I got from Paul Savona, and I heard him give it to all kinds of people, guys that had, in the midst of a recession or a major downturn in the economy, whatever, had lost their job and they didn't know what to do and there were no jobs available and they were sending out resumes and taking, interviews and those kind of things. His advice was go out and work somewhere. Go out and do something and get some work, which is a great advice we can give to people that are lazy. They just feel like, well, I'm just waiting for the magic job to come along, waiting for that one cool thing to come on. That's one of the best things you can do. For one thing, if you're not working, you just start feeling worse and worse about yourself and just, life's terrible, and then the finances are worse. When you can get out there and do a little bit to make a contribution, it makes a big difference. That's lazy people. The third kind of person we're going to look at is self-centered. A guy named Rick Warren wrote a book, sold about 80 million copies, I think. Not that many, but a lot. Called The Purpose-Driven Life. A lot of people have read it. Some of our growth groups are using it. It was on the number one on the New York Times bestseller list, I think, for a while. But the opening line of the first chapter says, "It's not all about you." But see, I think there's some people that don't have the purpose-driven life on their shelf. They have the princess-driven life. And the opening line of the first chapter is, "It is all about me." And they kind of live their life that way. There's people that we get in groups with, and we get really frustrated because it is all about them. And you just think, are you kidding me? I'm not a real big fan of country music. And, you know, write me all the cards and letters you want. I think country music is kind of an oxymoron. I just don't get, I know, boo me all you want. I don't understand it. I don't get it. But every once in a while, the one thing I do admire about it is their ability, their lyric ability to say some things that are just, it's so creative. Toby Keith had a song out about people that are, how we would kind of respond to people in our groups that are these princess, it's all about me. We talk about your work, how your boss is a jerk. We talk about the church and your head when it hurts. We talk about the troubles you've been having with your brother, about your daddy and your mother and your crazy ex-lover. We talk about your friends and the places that you've been. We talk about your skin and the dimples on your chin, the polish on your toes and the run in your hose. And God knows we're going to talk about your clothes. You know, talking about you makes me smile, but every once in a while, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me. That's right. I want to talk about us. Talk about number one, old me, my me, or whatever. What I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. How I like talking about you, usually, but every once in a while, occasionally, I want to talk about me. And there's people in there that are self-centered that just, and the whole world revolves around them. Now, that's kind of our image of them. I think there's some more subtle forms of that I want to take some time and look at. I think there's two subspecies I want to look at. And I think they're going to kind of surprise you. The first one is people that are incredibly needy and demanding. Needy and demanding people. And before we kind of get into this, there's times all of us are going to be needy and demanding. There's going to be times when the wheels come flying off in our life. Financial crisis. The death of someone important to us. We get a very serious sickness or illness. And when that happens in groups, when a crisis like that happens, sometimes we stop everything, the group stops, and comes around people and helps. Absolutely. But I think it's real important. We need to respond, when it comes to respond, is that we don't sacrifice the group for one person. Now that principle right there applies to all kinds of situations. You don't sacrifice the group, whatever that group is, the family, the work group, in political things, a team. We don't sacrifice the group for one person. If we don't put some limits in there, what begins to happen is that person's issues start to define the agenda for the group. The group becomes all about that. And it's okay once in a while for a period of time. But when it goes on and over, and I want to tell you, even if this is not just for people that are just needy people and it's like, oh, one more stupid thing they've done that has messed up their life and now we have to be all about them again. This is even if people are innocent victims of tragedy and loss. It's important for the group, but it's also important for the person that's dealing with the crisis. I've seen it happen in groups sometimes where if we let that person's agenda, their issues, become the defining part about the group, it's kind of like this person that got their head gashed open. They got to the doctor and got it stitched up, and every week we take the bandages off and look at it again. Well, how do you suppose this person's ever going to get better? There is a point in time to step in and say we need to help, we need to take care of the crisis. But there's also times you got to say, all right, we're not going to keep doing that because if we don't allow this person to move on, we're just going to keep rewounding them over and over and over again. And it becomes like misguided compassion. So it's real important that we don't let the one person's issues, we don't sacrifice the group for one person. But there are people, too, that have things that they do. And it's, again, over and over again. Whether it's addiction kind of issues, emotional neediness, finances, marital problems, whatever. And here's what I want you to remember about that. I want you to remember a thing called the cracked pot. You can write that one down. Remember the cracked pot. The camera guys right now are freaking out because they can't see me in the venue. So I'm coming back. Here I am. Here's a cracked pot. The fact is, This is, represents a person who's got issues and brokenness in their life. And here's what we try to do. And about 30 seconds after we got done pouring into this person's life that has incredible issues of brokenness all over it, they're going to need some more. And then a phone call at 3 o'clock in the morning needing some more. And then they come back to me because they're broken and they're leaking out all over the place. And I have nothing left to give them. And I have nothing left to give the people around me who deeply need me. I've seen this happen, just an application of this, working with students the last so many ever years here, especially when families are in crisis. But this applies not just to families in crisis, but whenever there's a crisis kind of thing going on. That at some point, we must force the person who has brokenness in their life to not just keep coming out to us to get refilled. What we have to force them to do is to say, you got to start taking care of some of these cracks here, some of these holes in your life. Because if you don't, you got to start taking some action yourself. There's a story in John chapter 5 where Jesus is talking to some people that are, he's healing a guy. And he tells the guy, he walks up to the guy and says, pick up your mat and walk. Well, the guy doesn't have to do that. He can stay there and be lame the rest of his life. The healing happened when he picked up his mat and started taking action that he needed to take. And sometimes what we need to do with people is to say, we've done what we can do, but we can't do any more until you start doing what you can do. That might mean, in terms of finances and stuff, you know, you got to get rid of some credit cards. That might mean certain relationships that you kind of have to stay away from. If you don't start, if we don't take some time to have some difficult conversations and tell people you've got to start working on those issues, whether it's counseling and start working on some marriage issues rather than just keep coming back with the crisis over and over again, what happens then is then we have nothing left to give to the people around us. And I watched that happen. The counsel advice I've given parents and families in crisis is do not let that child define the group, define the family. And it's so easy to do, to let that one person just suck up all of our attention, all of our energy. Meanwhile, the good kids over there, the average kids, are just kind of going, what about me? And I've watched it too, where it can be really disruptive to a marriage. And it's real important in the midst of that thing to leave some margin, leave some gaps there, so that your marriage, that you have date night still, that you're not giving everything away to the one crisis thing that's going on. That's the first kind of subspecies of this selfish kind of person, is the needy and demanding. The other one is negative, opinionated, domineering, divisive. You kind of get the idea. These are people that just take over, and it's their ideas are the only ones that matter, the only ones that are important, and it just divides. They play politics with that sometimes, and it just divides groups. Titus chapter 3 gives us a great principle. You don't have to turn to it. But Titus 3, 9 and 10 says, warn a divisive person once, and then warn him a second time. After that, have nothing to do with him. The principle how it comes to, when it comes to responding to him, is warn him twice and then walk away. But a real important disclaimer on that one, if you can. I mean, some cases it's just impossible to completely walk away. But as much as in your power to walk away from that relationship in terms of counting on that person in work group kind of things or on team kind of things, divisive people are not worth it, no matter how much they bring to the team. The fourth kind of person is what we're calling simple and naive. Simple and naive. And simple and naive are going to be just like the fifth kind of person we're going to look at in a second, and we're going to kind of, you'll see some parallels here. But simple and naive people, they do foolish and wrong things out of ignorance. They do foolish and wrong things out of ignorance. Flip back open to Proverbs chapter 22. Let's look back there again. Proverbs 22:3 says, a prudent or a wise man sees danger and takes refuge, but the simple keep going and suffer for it. The second one is they don't see the warning signs. There's all kinds of red flags and warning signs, and they just don't see them. They're naive and they're simple. And usually this is people that are younger, they don't yet have life experience, some of that. So Proverbs wrote this book of, Solomon wrote this book of Proverbs, by the way. He wrote it to his sons because he knew they were going to be targets for all kinds of sexual issues in their life. Proverbs chapter 7, he actually even takes the time to move away from principles and things and tells a story of a person who lacked judgment and was a target for sexual temptation, who should have known better but just didn't see the warning signs. It talks about issues of debt and money and how it's so easy to get ensnared into debt kind of things that are just going to tear up your life. It talks about bad relationship, toxic people. They're going to screw you up and mess you up all over the place. And it's interesting over in Ecclesiastes chapter 10, which is a thing that also I believe Solomon wrote. Ecclesiastes 10 verse 11, he says, "It does no good to term a snake after it bites you." And there's all kinds of application for that. But you can. There's sometimes with people in relationships that have messed them up, either because of they've been hurt and abused by those kinds of people, or just by being around them, they keep making dumb mistakes and they just keep going back to it over and over and over again. It's like the third one there is they believe almost anything. Proverbs 14:15 says, "A simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps." But back to that snake charming thing, they're out there, and you know I've seen this happen in people that, whether it's men or women, that get in certain kinds of relationships that are just toxic and bad people, and you watch them and go and see it just wreck their life, and you think, "Wow, aren't you glad you learned your lesson?" And 6 months later, doing it again, and you think, "Are you crazy?" And a lot of times they're just naive and simple. They don't get that. Quit going back to try to charm that snake. It's just going to bite you again. Run. Run away from those kind of toxic relationships and friendships. Simple and naive. We're not going to look at how to respond to simple and naive until we've looked at the number five here, the fool and the mocker. And we're going to look at those, how we respond to them together. But the fool and the mocker is number five. The fool and the mocker. While the simple and naive do foolish and wrong things out of ignorance, the fool and the mocker do foolish and wrong things out of arrogance. They do them over and over and over again. Proverbs 10:23 says, "A fool finds pleasure in evil conduct." It's the idea of liking it because it's wrong. Not just liking it because it's fun, but liking it because it's rebellious, liking it because it's wrong. That arrogance about that. And then one of my favorite verses in the whole Bible, especially when I was in junior high, Proverbs 26:11. Turn there, because you need to see that it's really in the Bible. And I'm not going to go into detail with this like I would if we were talking to a bunch of middle school students, but because some of you have not had your, you know, you're running on fumes right now, this would not be good. But as a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats his folly. And without getting real graphic about that, that's a if those of you that have dogs, you know. And the reason they go back to it is because they forget how sick it made them and how bad that was. But they know there's something about that that they liked. So let's go back and get after it again. Like, are you crazy? Simple and naive people don't see the warning signs. The fool and the mocker run over the warning signs. They think, "I'm different." They don't take advice. Proverbs talks about that fools don't take advice, don't listen to anybody. They ignore people that have suffered consequences. A lot of times they just think they'll be different on this one. They run over the consequences. And then when all the wheels start flying off, and they all inevitably do, not always like that, but some time goes by and they start to experience the consequences of that kind of decision making, then they'll blame God and everyone else for the mess they're in. Proverbs 19:3 says, "A man's own folly ruins his life, yet his heart rages against the Lord." It's an observation that Solomon in the ancient times, thousands of years ago, saw that, and nothing has changed about that. I'm amazed at the number of people that get out there and get all messed up and all screwed up, and they want to go on Oprah and talk about it. And talk about how it was all everybody else's fault. My jerk boss, or my jerk ex-spouse, or my this or that. Or then they shake their fist, "How can a good God let this happen to me?" And God had nothing to do with those dumb decisions you made. But it's something in us that wants to do that when we're have those foolish and mocking kind of tendencies. How to respond to the simple, the fool, and the mocker. We kind of respond to them in similar ways. The difference between the fool and the mocker and the simple person is usually a matter of age. Usually people that are more naive and simple tend to be younger. And what tends to happen is a person whose simplicity and his naivety is making a bunch of dumb mistakes, if that, he doesn't learn, more importantly, if he or she's parents or authority figures don't do some things to make sure they learn it, what will happen is they will morph into a fool and a mocker at some point. It just becomes something then that becomes part of their lifestyle. And now instead of, they know what the warning signs are, they just don't care anymore. Proverbs 22:15 says, folly is bound up in the heart of the child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Those are verses that are, that have so much meaning, and I think somewhere in this series we're going to spend some time looking at that whole issue of parenting and the whole important thing that we do as parents to bring discipline in there. All of those, the students that are here listening to this today are just going, man. The first thing, the principle though, when it comes to how to respond to the simple, the fool, and the mocker is, it's not easy. In fact, Proverbs 23:9 says, do not speak to a fool, for he'll scorn the wisdom of your words. But look over, I think we're, if we looked at the dog and the vomit passage in Proverbs 26, Proverbs 26:4-5 is one that just, when I first became a Christian, I thought, wait, the Bible's contradicting itself, and it's right in the next verses here, but then you understand kind of what he's doing here. Proverbs 26:4 says, do not answer a fool according to his folly, or you'll be like him yourself. If you stop right there, you say, okay, you don't deal with fools. You don't try to speak wisdom in their life. You don't do any of that because they're just fools. You'll just become like them yourself. Great. Don't mess with fools. Don't waste advice on fools. None of that. Then you read verse 5. Answer a fool according to his folly, or he'll be wise in his own eyes. Some of you parents know exactly what that's like when you go, oh, you don't know what to do here. Those of you that have people in your job situations or on teams where you're just, I don't know what to do because, and it's not easy. It's a dance sometimes. And sometimes you have to answer them and deal with them and try to speak wisdom in their life and try to convince them. Other times you just go your own way. But it's not easy. Proverbs 17:12 says, better to meet a bear robbed of her cubs than a fool in his folly. You know what a bear robbed of her cubs does? That's what a bear does. And I have noticed over the years with both students and with older people alike, when they get caught for something and you can't prove that they did it, I almost always have found that I can gauge their, by their reaction. They start getting real belligerent and real just roaring at me and irrationally mad. Oh, they're caught. They did it. Now, I can't prove it. I can't always bring consequences there. But you know, you caught them. That's what it's like to catch a fool in their folly. They roar like a bear. So if you can, it's not easy. You try sometimes to reason with them, try to give advice and wisdom and speak into that. If they don't respond, don't waste your time. If they don't respond, don't waste your time. Proverbs over and over again says wisdom and advice and resources are wasted on fools and mockers who have no heart for wisdom. But it's not just Proverbs that says it. Jesus, over in Matthew chapter 10, I think your note sheet says Matthew 18. But in Matthew chapter 10, in fact, I'm going to turn there. You can if you want. You know, Jesus came, when he came to deal with people, he came to deal with a lot of people that needed a lot of extra grace. He came to seek and save what was lost. Come to speak as the great physician, as the sheep without a shepherd. But now catch what he says. Chapter 10, look at verse 11. Whatever town or village you enter, search for some worthy person there and stay at his house until you leave. These are just the instructions he's giving to his closest friends and followers at this point. As you enter the home, give it your greeting. If the home is deserving, let your peace rest on it. If it is not, let your peace return to you. If anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake the dust off your feet when you leave that home or town. What he's basically saying is, you write them off. It's kind of like doing this. All right? We're done. If you're not going to be responsive to this, if you're not going to listen, after we have done diligent work here, he says, don't waste your time. What you have to do is then move on to places and people that will respond. Jesus did that all the time in his ministry. He would go to places and say, you know what, I'm done with you here because you're not going to listen. It's kind of like this whole crackpot thing. You know, if they're not going to take account, you know, take the time to really deal with some things here, then it's probably time to say, I'm not going to keep pouring resources away and keep wasting them, because I have limited ones I can give. I have limited money, limited energy, limited time. You can look at it in Acts chapter 18. Paul did the same thing when he was in Corinth with a group of people, where he just kind of said, kind of wash my hands of you, shake the dust off our feet, we're done. It's not easy. If they don't respond, don't waste your time. Instead, let the consequences do their work. Let the consequences do their work. Proverbs 26:3 says, a whip for the horse, a halter for the donkey, and a rod for the backs of fools. The application here is, it doesn't mean we take a rod physically to everybody we think is a fool and an idiot, although maybe that would be a solution to some things in our world. But I didn't say that. It's the idea of let them experience the real pain, the real consequences of it. And we said it over the years here, do not put a pan in the pants. Remember when you got busted when you were a kid? I got spanked when I was a kid every day for about, I think, 3 years. I'm not even sure why I deserved it. There was times I think it was just because it's good for you. But what you did whenever you know it's coming is you always, you know, like wore three pair of underwear and some shorts and tried to get your big huge wallet out or something like that. And sometimes we'll do that. I've watched it happen over and over again. I've watched parents do it. I've watched coaches do it. I've watched teachers do it. I've watched people that are leaders of businesses. There's a person and they're right there. They're about to experience the consequences of their action. It's right there. And if we get it, it's a golden opportunity, because if they get it now, especially if they're young, it's going to have ripple effects for the positive in their life forever. But I've watched people who just could not bear the pain of watching someone they cared for and loved suffer and hurt. And so they put a pin in the pants and they short-circuited what God was going to do with the consequences. Don't do it. You can't do it, as much as it hurts. There's some books that some guys, Cloud and Townsend, wrote called Boundaries. Brilliant books. You got to go and get them. Those of you that are readers, get them. Get them books on tape if you're not readers. But he talks about in there one important principle of, in terms of boundaries, is keeping your pain separate from the people around you. Because if you let their pain control your response and your decision making, they're never going to learn the lessons they need to learn. It's real important too. Proverbs 21:11 says, when a mocker is punished, the simple gain wisdom. Proverbs 19:25, flog a mocker and the simple will learn prudence. Rebuke a discerning man and he'll gain knowledge. Sometimes the mocker is never going to get it. The fool person is never going to get it. No matter how old they are, young they are, whatever, they're just not going to get it. But sometimes you do it because people are watching. And I've watched people that are kind of teetering there in that kind of, I don't know about that. Maybe drift in that direction or drift in this direction, and all of a sudden they watch the real consequences happen to somebody, and bam, that's all they needed to see. Sometimes that's the reason we do it, is just to let other people that are right teetering right there see those consequences and learn from them and step back. Finally, under responding to the simple, the fool, and the mocker, is when it comes, especially to in groups, put out the fire by attacking the hot spot. Put out the fire by attacking the hot spot. This comes from Proverbs 22:10. That says, drive out the mocker and outgo strife. Quarrels and insults are ended. Sometimes you've got to fire people. You've got to make decisions to remove people from situations and teams, no matter how valuable their contribution is or what it's perceived to be because of what it's doing to the group. And if you don't, people are going to get resentful of you and distrust your leadership. And there's times you got to address that particular person. And I've discovered over the years, and a lot of times in groups, especially when it seems like the whole group is kind of a mess and dysfunctional, not working right, you go in there and you look around and you go, it's that person right there. If you get rid of that person right there, move them away. And I've been amazed to see it happen. To move them out and move them to some, fire them, let them go, whatever. To watch that happen. Is that just everything calms down then. The fire kind of goes out. It's not an easy thing to do. A real important principle, though, on putting out the fire by attacking the hot spot, always with gentleness and respect. That comes from 2 Timothy 2:25. Paul talks about those who oppose him, he must gently instruct in the hope that God will grant them repentance, lead them to the knowledge of the truth. Titus 3:2, slander no one, be peaceable and considerate, and show true humility towards all men. You know, it'd be real nice when it comes to dealing with difficult people if we could just snap our fingers and make it all better. The fact is, the scriptures, these ancient texts, give us wisdom that is timeless and eternal. That the God who spoke the universe into place then spoke into men's lives and hearts, and they wrote it down for us here for 2,000 years later. That if we will learn to respond appropriately to difficult people and frustrating people, we will experience the kind of healthy group life in the world and the workplace and in our church. Let's pray together. God, we know that there are people out there. We probably, if we sit here and think today, are aware of all kinds of people that are we could fit into all of these categories here. Lord, would you help us figure out in real practical ways in the days ahead how to respond appropriately. In your name, amen.
We hope you've enjoyed today's study from God's Word. For more information, or if you'd like additional copies, please contact us at area code 760-724-6700. Our mailing address is North Coast Church, 1132 North Melrose Drive, Vista, California, 92083. Or visit our website at www.northcoastchurch.com. God bless you and thanks for listening.